News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings. Good to have you along. Special morning this morning for Dalton and I. We get to talk to our friend and Lieutenant Colonel Scott Mann. He's a retired Green Beret, New York Times best-selling author. He's done about everything you can do with a lot of talent and a lot of heart, Dalton.
Yeah, and what a great time to have him on once again here on Mobile Mornings. Lieutenant Colonel, thank you so much for coming on with Dan and myself.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're doing good. We're doing good. It has been a reflective time for me here recently. A loss of a friend, and also got a chance to go up Memorial Day up to Dam Neck to where Zach worked. So those things are good and bad, right? They give you a little this and a little that.
Yeah, you're right. And I had a similar experience, Dan, just the past, I think you and I talked about this, the last couple of weeks has been just a myriad of emotions. And I think, you know, I don't know, the older I get, I think that's okay. I think that's the way maybe it's supposed to be, but it is tough. It can be tough to deal with. And it's really one of the reasons I'm such a big proponent of storytelling, I think, is because it's a way to try to make sense of stuff that doesn't make sense.
Yeah. So, you were in with the Green Beret, and you were a leader, and you had to make sense of a world that did not make much sense to anybody on the outside looking in, in a foreign battleground. And the book is called The Generosity of Scars, How Your Stories of Struggle Can Change Lives, Especially Your Own. Talk about the book and what you're trying to achieve with the book.
Well, thanks. So it's the second in a leadership trilogy. The first one was Nobody's Coming to Save You, and that was all about basically my approach to rooftop leadership, what I learned as a Green Beret through human connection and how to overcome the churn of disconnection and distrust by just tapping into our human operating system and our quest for meaning and emotional connection and struggle, overcoming struggle. And then the second book, The Generosity of Scars, is all about the real tool to do that, which is storytelling. You know, it's the number one tool that we have as humans, even in these modern times, to make sense of things, to bridge trust gaps. You know, our brain works in story, Dan, and the problem is we've just drummed storytelling out of everything we do. Everything is a soundbite and a bullet point.
And I'm still a book guy, Lieutenant Colonel, although, you know, I'd like to read more. Life gets in the way sometimes, but, know, we're in this generation, and this is nothing new, but social media, and we talk about Instagram and all these different sites where you truly see not even the best parts of people's lives, but it's fake best parts of people's lives. And that's obviously having an effect on the youth and so many others. But you talk about telling real stories, and especially if it's someone who's in a similar line of work as you, or someone who's been through something you're currently going through, having those guides, those maps for how someone else did it and got through it and what they've encountered along the way is such a great resource. And you're right. It seems in so many ways that's kind of going away in a little bit.
Yeah, no, you're right, Dalton. I mean, like, when, you know, as a Green Beret, I spent most of my life in places where you were sitting across from, you know, an elder looking at you through a furrowed brow and, you know, 40 years of just being ticked off at a range of things. And he's got an AK-47 to his right and a cup of green tea to his left. And you're just hoping like hell he picks up the green tea, you know?
Yeah.
And the big way that you do that is your interpersonal engagement, your storytelling. And you guys know as well as I do that. And a lot of times when you make a connection with someone, it's through the stories that we tell. And when I came home from the military in 2013, I had a terrible transition. I looked at a country that was more divided, it seemed, than Afghanistan, more tribal than Afghanistan. And we were just tearing each other apart. And that really put me in a spiral for my own mental health. I almost took my own life. And it was really storytelling that saved my life. A mentor got me started on it as a way to, like, heal myself, using story to make sense of trauma and survivor's guilt. But it was really when I shared a struggle of standing in a closet holding a pistol under my chin with a buddy of mine in New York City, a veteran who was about to take his own life, that I realized, wow, like, the scars from our life, the things that we don't want to tell ourselves or tell others, actually are the stories that people need to hear. And that this generosity of scars is what inspired me to put something into the world that encourages all of us, whether we're in the military or not, to share our stories of struggle in the service of others, because Lord knows we need it.
You're taking the storytelling to another level, too, by writing the plays. I saw Last Out in Pensacola last year. At that time, we met, and you invited me to come down to Tampa, which I was happy to do, and saw 11 Days. That was the story of the Pineapple Express, basically. Just give a little thumbnail explanation of what that was all about. An amazing performance by you, by the way. Incredible play. But about the trying to get out of Afghanistan.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was just another example of what I call a scar story, a story of struggle that was a tough moment, where Afghanistan collapsed in a way that felt like our leaders abandoned our allies. So a buddy of mine named Nizam reached out for help, who was a commando, and we found a way with a few other veterans to use our cell phones and relationships to get him out, and then we scaled that up to a group known as Task Force Pineapple. And so I'd written a book on it, so I turned it into a one-man play, and I just tell the story from the stage. I do 24 characters in about 90 minutes, and I give the point of view of all of these different people in Afghanistan and here at home that we're just trying to honor a promise, a friendship, to not leave somebody behind. And when you do it through storytelling, even if you didn't know anything about it, when you're done, you felt like there.
Hmm. No doubt.
And by the way, we're bringing that to Pensacola in November.
Right. So when we get closer to that date, we'll have you on. We'll talk all about the play itself and make sure that it's well attended. Why are the stories, why are the hard stories, why are they the ones that we need the most right now?
Because, Dan, we have drummed struggle out of everything in our lexicon. Everything, as Dalton said, is performative. It's filtered. It's duck lips and pouty face. Like, you know, it's just everything is performative through this two-dimensional digital realm that we live in. And reality is, struggle is a biological necessity. You're either in struggle, you just came out of it, or you're getting ready to go back into it. It's the one thing that binds us all. And stories of struggle that then go to resolution and tell people how you changed and what you learned or what people are craving right now. That's actually how we make sense of the world. And leaders, parents, coaches who can take their scars, the moments where they went through struggle, and repurpose them into stories that serve other people, that's the people that we're going to follow. That's the people we're going to feel connected to. That's the people we're going to feel safest with. Mm-hmm. And that's what the book is all about.
Yeah, and it doesn't sound, I mean, this is obvious, but while so much of your actions and thoughts and what you've written about have to do specifically with war fighters and the veteran community and their families, this leadership, this is book two in this series, and you've done talks and everything. So this isn't just for military families, military members. This sounds like it can help a lot of people, whether they're trying to be leaders or just get closer to others and help out friends and family.
100%, man. This is not unique to veterans at all. In fact, it does help veterans and military family members and first responders take their struggles and put them into the world for healing and connection. But we do not have the market cornered on struggle, as you guys know very well. Like, this is a universal singular that we all go through. It's where we locate each other. We all go through some version of struggle. But what we've lost is the acumen to turn that into stories that serve other humans.
When you talk to audiences after they watch you, like my sister and I did in Tampa, and we spoke with you afterwards. And really, I'll be honest with y'all, when you talk to Scott after a performance, you really don't have anything to say. It's like, I don't know, what do I say after that? That's how mind-blowing the performance is and impactful.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that you write this story. It was your own life. You write these stories, so you're reliving these spots in your life that were so difficult, and then you're not just writing it, you're acting it and acting out all the different characters. It's got to just wear you out.
Yeah, you know, it's the way it looks, and then there's the way it actually feels. Okay. And what I've learned is that storytelling is very cathartic. And so what I'm really doing up there is probably more storytelling and less performance. And so what I do is I just have a relationship with the story. I have a relationship with the audience, and I'm just a vessel. God's just moving through me, and I'm just telling a story. In fact, I'm telling the stories of other people. So a lot of it has to do with how you manage your energy, your breath. Now, the way I always say is there's wounds, scabs, and scars. Wounds are open and festering, and that's trauma and grief, and you should not tell that publicly until it's resolved through therapy. Scabs are kind of healed over, but the least little move will pull that open, and again, you could get triggered from that, so be careful about that. Scars are resolved. Scars, you've already made meaning of it. It's still emotional, but you have access to it, and that's the stories that we're craving and that we need to put what I'm telling on that stage. These are all resolved things with me. They're still emotional, but afterwards, I'm just exhausted and spent, but I feel like I've been generous and I've given it all I've got.
I can't imagine what the audience, what do they say to you afterwards? What are some of the reactions real quick before we go to a break?
You know, I was at Virginia Military Institute, Dan, and I performed it, and there was a tier one operator came up to me afterwards, and he just stood at me and he just stared at me. And tears were just coming down both of our faces, and he couldn't speak.
Yep.
And so he just put his hands on the stage, and he just looked down, and I just put my arm around him, and we stood there until they turned the lights out, and everybody left, and we just didn't move. We just sat there and breathed, and that was one of the most poignant moments of my entire, you know, storytelling career.
It wasn't far off my reaction.
I remember.
It was incredible. Scott, we'll rejoin the conversation in a moment, okay?
Okay, pal.
Lieutenant Colonel Scott Mann, the generosity of scars, how your stories of struggle can change lives, especially your own. A great man. We love talking with him. We'll continue that conversation right after the break.
Turn up your voice on the text line, 251-343-0106. Now, back to Mobile Mornings.
Dana Dalton along with Lieutenant Colonel Scott Mann, our friend and wonderful guy, wonderful resource for so many that are hurting out there. Tell the stories. Get it off your chest. That can always help. You talk about wounds, scars, scabs, and scars. Scott, sometimes I don't know. It's been an emotional couple of months. I don't know what's what. I don't know what's a wound. I don't know what's a scab. I don't know what's a scar. But I know that there's pain.
Yes.
What do I do?
Yes. Well, okay, so, and this is for anybody. This isn't just for veterans. This is for people who are going through struggle themselves, who are helping other people through struggle. There's a few things about storytelling that I've learned along the way, right? First of all, storytelling is a natural thing that we've been doing for hundreds of thousands of years, and it's how we've made sense of the world and processed trauma more than any other modality, right? Storytelling is we're equipped for it, and it's very, very powerful. The other thing to remember is storytelling offers us a way to take something that scuffed us up and then make sense of it and adapt and learn. And when someone tells their story of struggle, what happens is the minute you hear that struggle, my dad's battle with cancer becomes your sister's battle with cancer. And it transports you into the story, Dan. And all of a sudden now you're autobiographically listening to the story. Mm-hmm. My dad's cancer is your sister's cancer, or your battle with cancer, or crap, I hope I don't get cancer. But you're making sense of your own lived experience in the safety of someone else's story. It's the most generous thing a human can do, right? And this goes all the way back to, like, if I staggered into the fire pit 10,000 years ago and I'm all bloodied up and I'm like, all right, let me tell you boys why saber-tooth tigers make crappy pets, right? You know, and everybody's listening like their life depends on it.
Yeah.
You feel like you wrestled with the tiger, but you didn't, right?
Yeah.
That's the generosity of it. Now, the point here is that it's not about you. Even though you might be the protagonist in the story's not about you. It's about the listener. Mm. And so what I tell people with stories is, if it feels white hot to the touch, if, like, telling it jams you up physically and, like, you experience, like, a true trigger, then it needs to be resolved through therapy and deep work. It's still a story that needs to be told, but it needs to be resolved in your mind, your spirit, and your body. And you'll know that just it feels white hot to the touch.
Yeah.
Now, if telling the story makes you emotional and you have an emotional response, that's actually a good thing. It just means that you have access to the emotional point of view, which is what people need. Because when you do that, people then drop their armor and they process their own emotional point of view. But a lot of times in this modern world, Dan, we think that we confuse emotion with trauma. and it's not the same thing. So if you have an emotional response, if you break down in front of people on stage because it matters, who cares? It's not about you anyway. It's about them and what they find in that story. So that's the way I tell people to kind of process it is, if it feels unresolved or white hot to the touch, work it through therapy, work it with a counselor, then put it into the world when it's resolved. And if it's resolved but emotional, that's the very if it's a story like you don't want to tell yourself or you don't want to tell others because it feels uncomfortable, that's the very one that somebody in the back row needs to hear.
That's a great way to lay that out. And Scott, too, you know, we're blessed with a microphone and willing listeners. And, you know, I know a lot of people that have stories that need to be heard. You know, sometimes they just maybe don't have ears out there that lend them the time to tell that story. And you talk about, you know, having a therapist and being able to speak with them. But if you have stories you need to get out, but you're maybe not seeing many people, you're staying pretty,
isolated.
Yeah. I mean, even writing it down, I would guess the web, it's wide, posting stories like that. Or do you recommend, you know, finding social groups that are willing to do that? Listen to
well, look, I mean, I'm not the guy that came up with this. I've been a recovering alcoholic for 25 years, and pretty much every Friday or Monday is a speaker meeting, and somebody stands up and they tell their story about how they came into recovery. There's a range of groups, and I'm just saying that that's another example of where just community, peer-to-peer, reaching out to someone. I don't necessarily recommend putting your story out on the internet, like I don't think it's not a very kind in the domain.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But I do think peer to peer works very well. Here's another technique that I've suggested to veterans, to first responders, is like when you're feeling that kind of thing, is first of all, is oftentimes it's not the stories that you tell, it's the stories that you ask to hear that can make a big impact in this world. Is reaching out to your peers with, you know, open-ended questions that let them tell you their story. Like if you're feeling bottled up, if you're feeling isolated, turn to someone else and ask for their story and watch what happens. By them telling them their story, what it'll do is it'll accelerate trust, and I guarantee you, next thing you know, you're telling your story to them.
Amazing.
So oftentimes the trigger or the catalyst that allows community-level storytelling to happen in times of isolation is not the stories we tell, it's the stories we ask the person next to us when we're feeling all jammed up to tell us, and then that frees up to us up to tell ours.
Lieutenant Colonel Scott Mann, the book is The Generosity of Scars, How Your Stories of Struggle Can Change Lives, Especially Your Own. He's also the playwright of 11 Days, which will be coming to Pensacola in November. So much more about that, and we'll have Scott back on at that time. And we can't thank you enough for your time this morning, Scott. Extraordinary. But at the same time, it's just, I'm just talking to a friend, and God love you, man. Thanks for all you do for everybody, including me.
Well, Dan, thank you and Dalton for what you do and for giving a voice to our military community and our first responders. It's big work, and nobody else is coming. It's just us. So I'm here whenever you guys need. Let me know.
You got it. Scott, good luck with the play. I guess it's getting cranked back up again, huh?
Yes, sir. It's getting cranked up, and we're going hard.
Okay. Scott Mann, our friend, and I think you should try to consider him your friend, and what a resource he is. That book is wonderful.
And by the way, I'm sure it's on Amazon, but scottmann.com. So it's S-C-O-T-T, Scott Mann with two N's, M-A-N-N, scottmann.com. He has the store there on that site, plus a lot of information about him and podcast appearances. And I see a limited edition gift box for this new book as well on there. So scottmann.com if you're interested in checking that out.
Mobile Bay starts its day with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig on Mobile Mornings.
Yeah, 8:35 now, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings on this Wednesday. Time to head to McConnell Automotive and talk with Louie Arata. Hey, Louie.
Good morning. Hang tight. We got a little fire truck going by me.
Well, hopefully it's a normal-sized fire truck. But
yeah, it's a normal size when it's right.
Well, stay safe out there. And I know we need people to make sure that you're out there at the lot at McConnell Automotive, because I'm sure you have some customers coming by soon when you tell them here what you got on the lot.
That's right. We've got a lot of stuff on the lot. You can check it out online at McConnellAutomotive.com. Hope everybody be careful out there. But if you have that unfortunate accident, don't forget Rachel and all the guys and the girls in the body shop back there. Do a fabulous job. They'll take care of all your needs back there. So you can call them at 251-476-4141. But like I said, McConnell Automotive.com, we have got one of the best selection of cars that I've seen there in a while. We got over 80 used cars, got those certified cars out front, and new cars. Don't forget half-ton trucks, 0%. I don't want to keep harping on it, but everybody wants 0%, and we got it, and we got a great selection.
Of course. And remind folks, too, what that GM certified means when they buy GM certified.
That gives you an extra 12-12 on the factory and bumps that powertrain up to 100,000 miles.
Yeah, it's that's a great thing. Where can folks find you?
East of I-65. Get off on Dolphin Street, and we're right down there on the left in the construction zone. But if you don't want to come to Dolphin Street, just come down O'Shell Road, take a right on Sage, and come through the back way. It's a lot easier. I go that way every day.
Yep, it'll put you right there. And, of course, the website, too, is great, McConnellAutomotive.com. Thanks for your time, Louie.
Hey, thank y'all. Come see us.
That's Louie Raddick. Go see him. And you'll find him at McConnell Automotive there on Dolphin Street, east of I-65, and the website, McConnellAutomotive.com.
All right, well, SCOTUS acted last night, Alabama.
9 p.m. is 9 p.m.? When I think that came down.
Alabama got the victory, at least Alabama Republicans, for sure. The U.S. Supreme Court... Tuesday night, the justices cleared the legislature's Alabama congressional map for the 2026 midterm elections. So that leaves us, it's one of our three big things. I read the story. Mm-hmm. You also came on with kind of an addendum about exactly the elections now coming forward. I think I've got it all clear in my mind.
Yeah.
Maybe, but let's do it again.
Well, yeah, and it's pretty clear to me now. I mean, I don't think you're allowed to tell this story without saying how confusing it is. And it has, I mean, they're depending on, you know, where you're reading your news and how far along you've been following this story, it's had twists and turns. And even yesterday, because the state had to operate off of the belief that, you know, if SCOTUS didn't rule or if they kept the last maps we used, the governor yesterday recalled qualifying for the same districts that we voted for in the actual primary last month.
Yes.
Well, it turns out, don't need that.
Yeah.
Don't need those last maps. We are going with this 6-1 map, the one drawn by the state legislature in 2023. And remember, they have already had qualifying for that. They had it following the primaries last month. Now, whether or not she will insist that they do qualifying again, I don't think so. But we know basically who is going to be running. We know who's going to run in each of these districts. And of course, District 2 becomes so much more competitive, or advantage goes to Republicans now for a House seat that's been held for the last couple of years by a Democrat, Shamari Figures.
Right.
So let me read a couple of what the justices who ruled along party lines, 6-3, granting Alabama the use of that 6-1 Republican map. What they wrote in the ruling here: the district court found a violation, even though the plaintiff's alternative map would not perform just as well to the state's constitutionally permissible criteria of keeping together the Gulf Coast community of interest and avoiding the pairing of incumbents. And remember, that's what we've been screaming from FM Talk 106.5 since that that 5-2 map was drawn a few years back. You're splitting an obvious community of interest in Mobile and Baldwin counties.
Right.
Well, the Supreme Court justices saw that and ruled this way. The district court, they wrote, also failed to follow our instruction in Calais, that Louisiana versus Calais ruling, that the mere fact that voters of different races vote for different parties is not relevant to proving racially polarized voting patterns. The state has also made a strong showing of irreparable harm and that the equities and public interest favor it. We have repeatedly cautioned that lower federal courts should not, quote, alter the election rules on the eve of an election, the justices wrote. Here, the district court interposed itself into Alabama's ongoing efforts to conduct its imminent 2026 congressional elections under maps that its elected representatives selected. Its view that conducting the elections under court-imposed maps would be more convenient for the state was not a valid justification for that intervention. While federal courts should not impose changes close to an election, states are free to decide for themselves whether last-minute changes to an election are in their best interest. So the justices there who wrote that basically saying the state gets to decide. And as long as what the state decides is not going against the Constitution, then they should be able to act, and the courts can't act like they did here with this ruling last week. There was also, of course, dissent from the three liberal justices. Part of that, Sonia Sotomayor, let me find her quote here, chastised her colleagues for enabling what promises to be a, quote, chaotic election held under a never-before-used congressional map that intentionally discriminates against black Alabamians. So, I mean, we're talking about Supreme Court justices here, and she's using the exact same language that so many of these, you know, partisan nonprofit groups are using.
Well, and also the three-judge panel, and that's the same language they use to throw this into the blender in the first place.
Exactly. And then you had here from, let's see, the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, Dual Ross. The Supreme Court's decision gives cover to Alabama and others to deliberately and openly discriminate against black voters without any fear of any consequence. The court's shameless decision to reinstate an intentionally racially discriminatory map defies any thoughtful or consistent application of the law. And he said the NAACP Legal Defense Fund will continue to throw all of their resources into the fight to ensure that Alabama voters have the fair representation that they deserve. So, you know, with the courts, I don't know if it's ever over. People will continue to file lawsuits and appeals. But that section there that the Supreme Court wrote in their, you know, confirmation of their ruling seems pretty clear cut to me. And I doubt they'll be hearing any more arguments on this in the Supreme Court.
I know. It's kind of like the Supreme Court. They've spoken. So I guess things can continue, but do they really mean anything at all? That's why they are the Supreme Court.
Like, right.
You know?
This is where the buck ends.
Shut your trap.
Yeah.
But, it is interesting, some of the language used not only by NAACP, who they certainly have some of their issues in the closet as well, but also from justices themselves.
Yeah, Sotomayor.
Almost sound like that. Uh-huh. That's a pretty divided court.
So now this is how this shakes out. We have this election coming up. And remember, so we have primary runoffs in less than 2 weeks, right, for some of the bigger statewide and federal races, and the Senate race being probably the marquee matchup in all of that.
So when is that exactly?
So that's June 16th, right?
Oh, yeah, you're right.
That's coming up very soon. This special primary election, which is going to be winner-take-all and only includes Alabama congressional districts 1 and 2 and 6 and 7.
Yeah.
You also have Montgomery area, two state Senate races that will be held that same day, but that's not really germane to so many of us and where we vote. But in the first district, after qualifying for this, you have Congressman Jerry Carl, the former congressman who represented this closer to this version of AL1
right,
that we're looking at now. And then by the votes that don't count, even would have won the runoff, more or less. I mean, he would have gone to a runoff, but he had the most votes in the previously drawn AL1. So right, he's got to be the odds-on favorite to win the AL1 primary here.
They call that the ghost election.
The
right?
ghost the, primary,
the
yeah.
Really didn't count, but it counted in terms of us trying to figure out who's got the real shot at winning.
Yeah, who's popular.
It's Carl.
Who's not. Yeah, so yeah. Carl, AL1, and he has three Republican challengers. You have Austin Sidwell, Lucas Berger, and John Mills. Of course, AL1 likely to go Republican. You have one Democrat that's running, Clyde Jones. So he will be the party's nominee in November unless something changes there. Second district, you have Shamari Figures, the sitting congressman, who will continue to run as the incumbent, even now that District 2 covers the Wiregrass and Mobile and Figures, you know, hometown isn't even in that district anymore,
no.
But he's going to continue to run. There's no law against that. And that is a much more Republican favored now with the redrawn map. And that's where you have State Representative Rhett Marcus, who jumped once the maps were redrawn
right.
from AL1 to AL2.
Right, back to the home turf.
Same with Joshua McKee, mm-hmm. who switched from AL1 to AL2. Hampton Harris was already running in the AL2 race. He sits there as well.
He just stayed seated.
Yeah, and then you have David Matthews, who I know Erica Thomas wrote a profile of yesterday at 1819news.com. Christian Horn and James Richardson. That's pretty packed Republican primary there with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 names. And I would say Rhett Marcus likely the odds-on favorite right now for that one. And Shamari Figures will be, you know, defending his incumbency.
So Rhett Marcus the favorite in 2, Jerry mm-hmm. Carl the favorite in 1.
I would believe so.
We're looking at it right now.
And you also have the District 6 and 7 races. And in 7, Congresswoman incumbent Terry Sewell, the only Democrat to qualify. There's 2 Republicans running there, Amy Akin and David Perry. And then the 6th district, you have an incumbent Republican and Gary Palmer. He's again being challenged by Case Dixon in the Republican primary. And then you have 4 Democrats up there running in the Democratic primary. So that's that. And it sounds like those are the races that we will be voting on come August 11th. And no runoff. Again, whoever comes out on top, even if it's 40%, 45% of the vote, they will be the party's nominee.
The thing you said there that really made the most sense at the very end was that's that. Those 2 words. That's that. Mm-hmm. It's like we've been waiting for a that's that moment.
Yeah.
And now we have it. And now everybody can kind of breathe easy. Jerry Carl can breathe easy, I think. He's probably breathing pretty well right now mm-hmm. with that ghost election going so well for him. People can fundraise from the people they need to get the money from. They can campaign in the area where they need to campaign.
Yeah, they know where the lines are
they
now.
They know where the lines are. And so now things can be rather normal. There's, again, a side of the argument that is not happy with this ruling. We've heard from them this morning. But at the same time, it seemed like Steve Marshall jumped on it real quick. There was some delay, maybe by the governor, I guess.
But no,
for the most part, it was addressed, and then SCOTUS did what they did last night.
And you know, you mentioned the clarity that these candidates have now. Yesterday, yeah. And reading these, we were prepping for the show yesterday before that Supreme Court ruling,
yeah.
And candidates were getting very antsy. I was reading John Sharp's AL.com story. And specifically Sidwell, Austin Sidwell, running out of Fairhope, and he's in that AL1 race. He was more outspoken about this than anyone. He felt that Governor Ivey and her administration, he didn't think the state has handled this well when it comes to the candidates and the voters. Even yesterday, with Ivey calling for qualifying for what is now a race that's not going to happen, they were really left without many answers. And voters, you know, I think it was less important for the voters to have answers immediately, obviously, than it is for the candidates who have these tens of thousands, for some of them hundreds of thousands of dollars, millions of dollars to spend in these races.
Yeah.
For them, certainly, they needed some answers and as quickly as possible. For voters, you know, you kind of wait and see how things shake out. But Sidwell said, quote, "I understand the need to take steps to prepare for any outcome, but I cannot overlook the amount of confusion this is causing the people of Alabama. Mm. Most people I talk to have no idea what's going on anymore. Even former Congressman Carl, it's mass confusion. All the candidates are calling one another and trying to figure out what's going on. Well, I don't think there's as much confusion now, but I do think that this could have been handled in a more authoritative way, or maybe a more structured way by the governor. I mean, when you need someone to be mobile and freewheeling, but still be able to talk authoritatively on matters like this,
yep.
Governor Ivey is not the one you need to go to. And waiting for her office to kind of filter through how they want to come off in their conversations with the media. And first off, the lack of access to Governor Ivey. This certainly could have been handled better from the top down. But again, so much of that is moot now because these are the maps. This is how we'll be voting in August on August 11th.
And soon, I guess, the governor will be Tommy Tuberville.
Yeah.
I mean, I say soon. He'll be the next governor, more than likely. And will we see a much more proactive manner from the governor being Tommy Tuberville? I think we will. We'll also probably have greater access to him.
I would hope that if he's governor, and hopefully he continues talking with our station as much as he does, but we'd probably be looking at him on Fox News last night at 9:30 after the Supreme Court ruling, if Tuberville were the governor.
Good point. 851 FM Talk 106.5 text line is there for you. 251-343-0106. Let us know what you're thinking.
News, weather, traffic, and sports. You're listening to Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, 856. I don't think the outrage is at this level, but Squirrel Marine wants to know, will we start seeing no queens demonstrations in the state of Alabama to protest against Governor Ivey? Also, unnamed texter says Governor Ivey is incompetent. Governor K. Biden Ivey. Alabama gets what it gets. Okay.
I'll have you know, she is one of the most popular governors in the entire country. Now, who's saying that she's popular? I don't know, because holy cow. I mean, doesn't it seem like we've been rudderless for some time now?
It does.
As a state?
It does. We're used to it.
I guess.
I think the shock to the system is going to be when we see what it looks like when it's not that way. Mm. Where if Tuberville does his best Donald Trump and gets to action on all kinds of executive orders or whatever he's going to do from the start, he seems like that could be what he delivers to us. And if he does, that's going to be a real shock to the system. And again, popular, I guess, according to some polls, but it was her stance against veterans, basically, that cost some people some elections the last time around.
Mm-hmm.
Where they stood on Governor Kay Ivey and the Veterans Board issue and Kent Davis and all that. That really resonated around the whole state and didn't quite realize it did, because the legislators themselves never really paid enough attention to it publicly. No. Correct?
No. Yeah, exactly. And then that was much earlier on, you know, before the election, but certainly not forgotten by so many.
I know.
And then the big PSC, Public Service Commission push. Yep. Oh, man. Saw some incumbents take some hits after that, where citizens of Alabama went, what exactly is going on with the Public Service Commission, and why do they so badly want to keep us from voting on it? Leo says, very happy I'm going to get to vote against Ukraine-loving Jerry Carl. Squirrel Verine. Okay, yeah, you read that one. Joshua says, the Supreme Court's latest rulings are the closest thing to freedom I've seen in my lifetime. All my life I've lived under racist laws that were made in the 60s to punish other racists. I took no part in this. I wasn't even born yet. Michael, hammering Quinn this morning after that Supreme Court ruling, he said yesterday made his back and forth with Jeff all the more hilarious. Chris in Orange Beach. We'll get to some of these texts. Hopefully Jeff can get to some of them as well. 251-343-0106.
The Jeff Force Show. Your Wednesday edition is straight ahead.